All right, blue crabs. Jason and Corin, come on up. Corin, come on up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For those of you that don't know us, my name is Jason Rock, and next to me is Corin Flora. We're the leads for the Blue Crab Fishery Management Plan. We're getting near the end of the FMP process, and we're here today to get approval from the Commission to send Draft Amendment 3 out for public and standing and regional advisory committee review. And that is step 4 over here. And since there are no rules that need to be adopted, Amendment 3 is scheduled for final approval by the Commission in February of 2020 at the moment. The presentation today is going to focus on the issues addressed in Amendment 3. However, the entire draft of Amendment 3 is in your briefing books for you to review. For Amendment 3, we explored a wide range of issues. Where's my mouse? And topics related to the blue crab fishery and the stock as a whole. Each issue is addressed in its own issue paper, and the ones we looked at were achieving sustainable harvest in the North Carolina blue crab fishery, additional management measures beyond quantifiable harvest reductions, addressing water quality concerns impacting the North Carolina blue crab stock, expanding crab spawning sanctuaries to improve spawning stock biomass, establishing a framework to implement the use of terrapin excluder devices in crab pots, as well as bottom disturbing gear in the blue crab fishery. First, though, I'd like to give a quick recap of the stock assessment results to kind of help set the stage for the first issue paper in particular, as well as for the new members here who haven't seen any of this material before. For the blue crab stock assessment, we used maximum sustainable yield, also known as MSY-based reference points. MSY-based reference points are widely used in blue crab management, such as by the Gulf States Marine Fisheries Commission up in the Chesapeake Bay and by the state of Florida. Specifically, we use spawning stock abundance and fishing mortality at MSY as the threshold reference points for overfished and overfishing, and which is these dashed lines here in each figure. And then for the target reference points, we use the spawning stock abundance at MSY, at 75% of MSY, which is the dotted lines in each figure, so the top one here and the bottom one over here. The top figure shows the annual spawning stock abundance, which is the solid line here, and that in the gray shaded area is the confidence intervals around that estimate for each year. The spawning stock abundance threshold, this lower dashed line, is the abundance of mature females when fishing at maximum sustainable yield. And the target, which is that upper dotted line, is the abundance of mature females when fishing at 75% of MSY. And you can see on the figure here, in the late 1990s, the spawning stock biomass was above the target value. But since 2004, it's either been below or hovering around the threshold value. And in 2016, it was below the threshold value here. And we calculated there's a 98% probability that the stock is overfished. The bottom figure shows the annual fishing mortality, which again is the solid line here, estimated from the stock assessment, and the gray shaded areas are the confidence intervals around those estimates. The fishing mortality threshold is this upper dashed line here, which is fishing mortality at MSY, and then the target value is the dotted line down here. And you can see in the late 1990s, fishing mortality was well above the threshold, and then beginning in 2007, it dropped down below the threshold and hovered either above the target or between the threshold and target generally through the rest of the time series. However, in 2016, which is the terminal year, it was just above the threshold value, and we calculated there's a 52% probability that overfishing is occurring. And I just want to point out that this is likely an optimistic outlook, as the assessment did not include data from the commercial peeler and soft crab fisheries, which is common for blue crab stock assessments, or for the recreational fishery because we don't have a good estimate of recreational harvest. So there were those limitations with the assessment. And due to the results of the stock assessment, the first issue we looked at was achieving sustainable harvest in the blue crab fishery. The minimum statutory requirements are a harvest reduction of 0.4% is needed to end overfishing within 2 years, and a reduction of 2.2% is needed to achieve sustainable harvest within 10 years with a 50% probability of success. And then in this issue paper, we also propose updating the adaptive management framework for blue crab. And for the harvest reduction calculations, we only calculated these for the commercial hard crab fishery because that's what the stock assessment was based on. However, any management measures that are approved will affect all applicable sectors. So, for example, if the male hard crab size limit were increased, it would apply to both the recreational and the commercial fisheries. And although we looked at many different measures, only management measures with a reasonably quantifiable reduction that fell within the range of what was needed for sustainable harvest were included in the issue paper. And these included a mature female size limit, prohibiting harvest of immature female hard crabs, season closures, as well as adjusting the cull tolerance. And I would also like to note that because we looked at the effects to different areas of the state in the issue papers, ocean harvest data was excluded from the analysis because most of the data is confidential and it only accounts for roughly 0.02% of the harvest, so it would have had minimal impact of the harvest reductions either way. So this table summarizes the annual estimated harvest reductions for each of the management measures we examined. Keep in mind the required harvest reductions from the stock assessment are relative to the terminal year, which is 2016. However, we did include multiple years and the average across years to help highlight some of the variability that's observed in the fishery. We explored four different size limit options for mature female crabs, starting with the 6 3/4 inch maximum size limit, and a 6.5 inch maximum size limit, then a 5 inch minimum size limit, and a 5 1/4 inch minimum size limit. You can see the 6.5 inch maximum size limit has the highest estimated harvest reduction, about 4.3% in 2016, and the 5 inch minimum size limit had the lowest estimated reduction of 0.9% in 2016. We also looked at prohibiting immature female harvest, and that's here, that's estimated to have a 0.5% harvest reduction from 2016 numbers. And you can see this is considerably lower than previous years, and that's likely due in part to this management measure being implemented as part of the 2016 revision to the crab plan, which was done because of the condition of the traffic light at that time. And we also explored several different season closure periods, and just to keep it brief and as an example here, these are the numbers for what a March season closure would be. March closure is estimated to have a 5% harvest reduction for 2016. And with this measure, you can really see some of the variability across years. So it ranged from about 0.5% in 2014 to 5% in 2016 and kind of ran the gamut in between. And from 2011 to 2016, the average was about 2.5%. And a lot of that has to do with how warm a winter we have and the availability of those crabs during that time. Finally, we looked at reducing the cull tolerance of prohibited crabs. The current cull tolerance is 5%, and that was implemented in the 2016 revision. Prior to that, it was 10%. Reducing the cull tolerance to zero, which is shown here, is estimated to have about a 3.6% harvest reduction for 2016, and that's assuming that the immature female prohibition stays in place as well. And just a reminder, if the commission wants the immature female prohibition and the 5% cull tolerance that are currently in effect through the 2016 revision to remain in place, you'll need to select them as part of your preferred management options. Otherwise, they'll expire once Amendment 3 is adopted. And then just for your reference, tables 4.1.14 and 4.1.15 on pages 103 to 105 of the draft FMP show the overall estimated harvest reductions for different combinations of these management options. And keep in mind that you can't just add the individual estimated reductions together, as that would overestimate the total expected reduction. And then, like I said, in this paper, we also propose updating the adaptive management framework for blue crab. Amendment 2, which was adopted in 2013, first established adaptive management for blue crabs, and that was based on an annual update to the traffic light, which used triggers to determine the need for additional management action. And like I said, in 2016, a revision was adopted in, using this framework from Amendment 2. For Amendment 3, we would like to modify the adaptive management framework and base it on the stock assessment rather than the traffic light. Specifically, the framework would entail updating the stock assessment at least once in between full reviews of the FMP, and this was a recommendation from the peer review panel for the stock assessment. Then, if the stock is overfished or overfishing is occurring, then management measures would be adjusted using the director's proclamation authority. Any quantifiable management measure with the ability to achieve sustainable harvest would be considered. And use of the director's proclamation authority for adaptive management would be contingent on consultation with the Northern, Southern, and Shellfish Crustacean Advisory Committees, and then ultimately approval by the Marine Fisheries Commission. And then if the stock is not overfished or overfishing is not occurring, then current measures would remain in place until the next scheduled review of the FMP is completed. And then as an additional note, upon evaluation by the division, if a management measure adopted to achieve sustainable harvest is not working as intended, then it can either be revised or removed and replaced as needed, provided it conforms to steps 3 and 4 above, which are it meets the sustainable harvest reductions as well as consulting with the ACs and then approval by the commission. So the Blue Crab Advisory Committee, before I get into that though, for this and all recommendations, it might be helpful for you to look at Table 1 in the Blue Crab Memo that was part of your briefing books, as this will allow you to easily compare and contrast the division and AC initial recommendations for each issue as we go through them. The Blue Crab AC recommends option 18.3, which consists of north of the Highway 58 bridge, a January closed season, a 6 3/4 inch mature female maximum size limit, and prohibiting immature female harvest. And then south of the Highway 58 bridge, a March 1 to March 15 closed season, and prohibiting immature female harvest. And this results in an estimated 3.2% harvest reduction from 2016 levels. So that's above the minimum required by statute. They also recommended maintaining the 5% cull tolerance. It was established in the 2016 revision. And finally, they did not reach a consensus recommendation for the adaptive management framework. A motion to approve of the framework failed in a 3-3 tie, and they didn't take any other votes on the matter. So the division recommends option 12.8, which consists of a 5-inch mature female minimum size limit, prohibiting immature female hard crab harvest, a March closed season, and this results in an estimated 6.3% harvest reduction from 2016 levels. And what this does is this reduces fishing mortality to the target value, is what this does. And it would rebuild the SSB in between the target and the threshold. The division also recommends maintaining the 5% cull tolerance established in the 2016 revision, as well as adopting the proposed adaptive management framework. The next issue we looked at was management options that did not have a quantifiable harvest reduction. These measures do not count towards sustainable harvest, but they should have positive impacts on recruitment and other population metrics. They should also help enhance the population, with the results being seen when the stock assessment is updated. We looked at several non-quantifiable measures, and just to note, the options that are bolded up here are ones that are currently in effect through the 2016 revision. Broadly, we looked at increasing the cull ring size. There is research that shows increasing the cull ring size increases the escapement of sublegal males. We also looked at changing the minimum number of cull rings per pot. And there is research that has shown that increasing the number of cull rings has no significant effect on blue crab catch, so that would be the legal crabs. We also looked at modifying the placement of cull rings. There's research that has shown that modifying the placement of cull rings can greatly increase the escapement of sublegal crabs. They found that 60% of sublegal crabs escaped within 1 hour in those modified pots, compared to 4% in control pots, so that's quite a difference. We also looked at removing the cull ring exemptions for the Newport River and Eastern Pamlico Sound. Fishermen in those areas are currently allowed to close their cull rings so they can catch small, mature female crabs. We also explored requiring degradable panels in crab pots, increasing crab trawl mesh size, limiting the harvest of sponge crabs, establishing a minimum size limit for soft and peeler crabs, establishing a pot limit, and implementing fishing time restrictions. And like I said previously, the bolded options, which is the minimum of 3 cull rings per pot, 1 cull ring in the modified position, which would be the placement, and then prohibiting the harvest of dark sponge crabs during the month of April. These are already in effect through the 2016 revision, and if you want these measures to stay in place, you'll need to select them as part of your preferred management options. Otherwise, they'll expire when Amendment 3 is adopted. For this issue, the Blue Crab AC recommended leaving in place the measures adopted through the 2016 revision and not implementing any new measures at this time, with the exception of allowing the crabbers 2 options on cull rings. They could either use a minimum of 2 cull rings in their pots, provided both of them are in the proper corner placement, or they could use a minimum of 3 cull rings in pots if only one of those was in the proper corner position. The division recommends option 2A, which is increasing the minimum number of cull rings in pots to 3. Option 3B, which is placing 2 cull rings in the modified corner placement on opposite outside panels of the pot. Option 4C, which is removing the cull ring exemptions for the Newport River and Eastern Pamlico Sound and prohibiting designating such areas in the future. Option 7C, which is prohibiting the harvest of sponge crabs year-round. And option 8A, which is establishing a 3-inch minimum size limit for peeler and soft crabs. So the next issue paper focused on water quality impacts from agriculture and potential approaches to address the issue. The Environmental Management Commission has authority over activities affecting water quality and alteration of wetlands. The Coastal Resources Commission manages development within and adjacent to public trusts and estuarine waters, coastal marshes, and ocean hazard areas. And there are also many other state and federal agencies and interstate programs that look at addressing water quality issues. Agricultural contributions to non-point source water pollution are generally managed through volunteer participation. And it has been shown that there's mortality of blue crabs has been observed from pesticides that enter surface waters through overspray, aerial drift, or rain events. And the Department of Agriculture's Pesticide Division, along with the Division of Water Resources and Division of Marine Fisheries, investigated a 2012 mass mortality event of peeler blue crabs that was reported. The cause of the kill was found to be the pesticide bifenthrin, which is commonly used with cotton and is considered highly toxic to invertebrates. And it's believed this entered surface waters due to runoff from a rain event. The investigation found the application of the pesticide did not violate the label application directions. However, best management practices could have been followed that to minimize the impacts. And then overall, water quality restoration projects in general are complicated. They take time and collaboration. For instance, the Neuse River Basin Restoration Project began in 1998 with the goal of reducing the nitrogen load by at least 30%, and they're still working to achieve that goal. So, and keeping in mind that this commission has no direct regulatory authority over land use and other water quality, other practices that impact water quality, we did come up with a few things the commission could do. You could highlight problem areas and advise other regulatory agencies on potential solutions. You could push to create an interagency work group to facilitate cooperation and efforts in monitoring and restoring water quality. You could work with state agencies and interest groups to support the Clean Water Act. You could task the CHIP Steering Committee to prioritize blue crab water quality impacts. You could send letters to other state agencies sharing concerns about water quality and the importance of best management practices. You can invite other agencies to future MFC meetings to present mitigation efforts on water quality impacts, monitoring, and rehabilitation. And finally, we could initiate public outreach encouraging the public to report crab and fish kills. And the image here is information the division added to the dealer reports following the 2012 mortality event that highlighted the importance of reporting these events immediately and how to go about reporting them. A lot of cases, we hear about these well after the fact, and by the time we hear about them, it's too late to investigate to find out the cause because the contaminants have already left. So both the division and the Blue Crab AC support all the options presented and further recommend option 4 as the highest priority, which is working with the CHIP Steering Committee to prioritize blue crab water quality impacts and having division staff report back to the Shellfish Crustacean Advisory Committee with progress on these recommendations. The next issue we looked at was expanding and designating new crab spawning sanctuaries. The existing sanctuaries.
Can I ask a question real quick? Can you go back to the ways we can get involved on water quality? Sorry, real quick. So,
anyone in particular?
The page before that. So number 2, push to create joint interagency working group. What are the action steps, Steve, maybe from your perspective? Like, what do we got to do to get some, I mean, we talk about water quality, but when it comes to like action steps of getting the ball rolling, what do we got to do as a commission to get some of those happening?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we've had this discussion, as a matter of fact, a couple weeks ago at the department directors meeting, talking about the role of the Coastal Habitat Protection Plan, and I think we have some opportunities now, particularly with the governor's initiative and with the secretary's strong support for water quality, to have divisions come to their commissions. And really the three are the MFC, EMC, and the CRC. But to have divisions come to those commissions with meaningful rule making that, you know, could try to address some of this stuff, whether it's riparian buffers or, you know, any of the things that Jason's been alluding to here. So I think support from the commission, certainly as a letter writing type of thing, is certainly a good thing. But I really think that the three commissions have to work together to do these types of things. When you look at the CHIP, the intent of the CHIP was to identify and protect critical fishery habitats, and that's what the law says. And so, and we've done a great job of identifying it. We've done a great job of basically pointing out what those strategic habitat areas are. Now the next step is to take actions to protect some of those areas and to improve it. So,
do we need to do anything then to initiate that meeting with those other commissions?
That will be up to you, but if you'd like to write a letter to the other commissions to support that type of effort or any other type of effort that's proactive in water quality and habitat protection, that would be great.
Yeah, so maybe we can talk about.
Yeah, be glad to. Put
that
on our
like
to-do
that
list,
looks.
Catherine, if you would. It's become a bigger and bigger issue, and that's a good point made. Martin?
And I like to mention a little earlier, I like to add habitat availability to that list, because that's once again one of the CHIP issues that I think is becoming increasingly important, particularly for a bottom species like blue crabs. So once again, part of that same process.
Sure. Okay. All right.
Yeah, so I just, whatever we got to do to not just talk about it, but actually do something, I want to do that. So let's, whatever we need.
We'll start with the letter and see if we can't push this process a little bit.
Sure. Great.
Good point. Good point. Yes.
Yeah, but could I like Deputy Secretary Nicholson to address Cameron's question there a little fuller?
Hey, good morning, gentlemen. Cameron, to come at you directly, I was actually going to talk with the chairman this morning, but he had kind of few bigger things on the plate. I personally think it would be great for membership of the commission to join our stakeholder group that's looking at sustainability and resiliency as a result of Executive Order 80. We have what's called the Working Lands Group, and just the general interest in the resource and the environment, this body would be great, and you're not represented there right now. You have Steve and the CHIP crew and the folks in this room, but to the best of my knowledge, you'd be the first commission to have somebody coming and sitting down and talk to us on that.
We'd be more than happy to be part of the process.
Yeah. Thank you all.
Thank you.
I'm good. Sorry. Didn't side rail right there.
No. Good discussion. Sorry about that. Like I was saying, we also, the next issue we looked at was expanding and designating new crab spawning sanctuaries. The existing sanctuaries at Oregon, Hatteras, Ocracoke, Drum, and Barden Inlets were originally designated in 1965, and they replaced a prohibition on sponge crab harvest that was previously in effect. Crab spawning sanctuaries are currently closed to the use of trawls, pots, and mechanical methods for oysters and clams, and to the taking of crabs with any commercial fishing equipment from March 1st through August 31st. And no crab spawning sanctuaries exist south of Barden Inlet, so there's 14 inlets to the south that do not have sanctuaries around them. Research studies have shown the existing crab spawning sanctuaries are largely ineffective due to their small size, and that migration corridors and expanding the size of the sanctuaries may help increase the number of mature females reaching the spawning grounds. One study estimated less than 1% of mature females in Pamlico and Croatan Sounds are protected by the existing crab spawning sanctuaries, and that's compared to 70% in the Chesapeake Bay sanctuary system that they have. Maps showing the specific proposed boundary expansions for existing and new crab spawning sanctuaries can be found on pages 154 through 172 in the draft of Amendment 3 that's included in your briefing materials, if you want to take a look at those when you have a chance. As far as recommendations, the Blue Crab AC recommends keeping the crab spawning sanctuary boundaries for Oregon, Hatteras, and Ocracoke inlets the same, and to change the Drum and Barden inlet boundaries to what is shown in the issue paper. They also recommend adding crab spawning sanctuaries from Beaufort through Tubbs Inlets, as shown in the paper, and to have them closed from March 1st through October 31st with the same restrictions as existing sanctuaries. The division recommends expanding the boundaries for Oregon, Hatteras, Ocracoke, and Barden Inlets, as shown in the issue paper, and moving the boundary for the Drum Inlet Sanctuary, as shown. The division also concurs with the AC recommended boundaries for all southern inlets, except for the Cape Fear River, where the division boundary is slightly different in the Atlantic Ocean. And that's mainly for ease of enforcement, the difference in the boundary lines. We took it out to a channel marker, basically. The division also concurs with the AC recommendation of a March 1 through October 31 closure for Beaufort through Tubbs Inlets with the same restrictions as existing sanctuaries. And the division also recommends establishing a crab spawning sanctuary on the east side of Croatan Sound, which is closed to blue crab harvest from May 16 through July 15th. The next issue is a holdover from Amendment 2. In Amendment 2, the Commission recognized diamondback terrapin as a wildlife resource in need of protection from crab pots and sought to proactively implement conservation measures. Diamondback terrapins are a state species of concern in North Carolina and federally listed as a species of concern in Dare, Pamlico, and Carteret counties. Here we look to develop criteria for using existing proclamation authority to require the use of terrapin excluder devices in crab pots. The use of this proclamation authority is contingent on the criteria being approved by the Commission. In this issue paper, we developed those criteria and sought to include public comment, advisory committee consultation, and scientific data in the process. And the overall result would be the creation of diamondback terrapin management areas. So criteria one sets the specifications for terrapin excluder devices. It also creates a work group consisting of fishermen, researchers, and fisheries managers. It also allows for new terrapin excluder designs to be incorporated so long as they maintain the level of diamondback terrapin protection as devices that are initially approved. The second criteria requires the use of terrapin excluder devices in these diamondback terrapin management areas from March 1st through October 31st to cover the entirety of their active season, based on division observations as well as research studies. And this would affect both commercial and recreational pots in those areas. Criteria three defines the potential interaction zone as waters that are less than 250 meters, roughly 820 feet from shore, and less than 3 meters or roughly 10 feet deep at low tide. It also allows the interaction zone to be revised as new research becomes available. Criteria four uses data from the division, the National Heritage Program, other agencies, universities, and peer-reviewed literature to verify diamondback terrapin presence and overlap with the crab pot interaction zone. Criteria 5 states that diamondback terrapin management areas will be drawn to incorporate a significant portion of the potential interaction zone that contains verified populations of diamondback terrapins and to minimize the inclusion of areas outside the interaction zone. However, boundaries of existing natural or conservation areas may be used as Diamondback Terrapin Management Area boundaries to simplify enforcement and to support the conservation goals of these areas. And examples of these areas are state natural areas, national estuarine research reserves, national wildlife refuges, or national seashores. Criteria 6 states the division will produce an information paper with the information previously discussed and present it to the appropriate regional advisory committee for input, inform the public via news release, hold a 30-day public comment period, and contact local fishermen and researchers for their comment as well. Criteria 7 is where the division would actually issue a proclamation, and this would be done at least 1 month prior to the effective date, as well as marking the boundaries of the Diamondback Terrapin management areas. And a few additional points for consideration. This targeted approach is meant to improve localized protection of Diamondback Terrapins and to minimize impacts to the blue crab fishery. This approach uses the best available scientific data and allows for new data to be incorporated as it becomes available and minimizes the inclusion of areas outside the interaction zone. Further, establishing some protections for Diamondback Terrapins may improve fishery ratings from third parties such as Seafood Watch and aid in sustainability certifications from groups like the Marine Stewardship Council. The Blue Crab AC recommends studying pot funnel designs to reduce terrapin bycatch and to identify terrapin hotspots that would be close to potting. The division recommends using the criteria outlined to establish Diamondback Terrapin management areas.
So these criteria are not in Amendment 3 at this time, correct?
They're included as part of Amendment 3 now.
They are?
Yes. Okay. That issue paper developed these criteria, so they're part of Amendment 3. So if Amendment 3 is adopted and you choose to go with the criteria, they'll be adopted as part of the amendment.
Okay. Yeah.
Moving on to the last issue we looked at, this deals with the use of bottom disturbing gear, particularly dredges and trawls in the blue crab fishery. These gears have both historical importance and cultural significance in the blue crab fishery. However, both gears present fishery and habitat concerns, and in some areas these gears catch primarily overwintering mature female crabs. Targeted crab dredging is only allowed in a designated area in northern Pamlico Sound from January 1st through March 1st, and that's this outlined area here. However, this fishery was closed as part of the 2016 revision. Crab harvest is still allowed in the oyster dredge fishery outside of this area, but it's limited to 50% of the combined weight of the oyster and crab catch, or 500 pounds, whichever is less. And overall, the dredge fishery accounts for less than 0.1% of commercial landings on average. Crab trawls, which are typically heavier than shrimp trawls, are allowed above the shrimp trawl lines in the Pamlico, Pungo, and Noose Rivers. So the hatched areas on these maps are closed to shrimp trawls, but they're still open to crab trawling. The red circles on each map show the upper extent of where crab trawling is allowed on each river, and it's the inland waters boundaries where those circles are. Trawls in general have been shown to have more severe impacts on fragile habitats than other gears. Landings of blue crabs from crab trawls in these rivers has declined since 1995 and have been fairly minimal since about 2007. Blue crab landings from trawls have made up about 0.1% of the total crab harvest on average in the past 5 years. The Blue Crab AC recommends not adopting any of the proposed management options for crab dredging and crab trawling. So their recommendation would allow the targeted crab dredge fishery to reopen as well. The division recommends option 1A, which is to prohibit the taking of crabs with crab dredges. Option 1D, which is reducing the catch limit from oyster dredges to 10% of the combined weight of the crab and oyster catch, or 100 pounds, whichever is less. And option 2A, which is prohibiting the use of crab trawls in areas where shrimp trawls are already prohibited in the Pamlico, Pungo, and Neuse rivers. Then, as a reminder, today we're looking for commission approval to send the draft plan out for public comment and standing and regional advisory committee review. The commission does not need to choose its preferred management options at this time. That will occur at your November meeting. After the November meeting, the draft plan will undergo departmental and legislative review, and then in February 2020, we'll bring the draft plan back to the commission for final approval. And I'd like you to keep in mind that this presentation is really the Cliff Notes version of these issue papers. So as you're reviewing the draft plan over the next few months, please feel free to contact myself or Corinne if you have any questions. And we're happy to answer any questions you have at this time.
Okay, questions. Mike? Doug? None?
Not at this time.
Mike, y'all are geared up. Okay.
He wants to make a motion.
Any questions, comments, or anything on this? Mark, excuse me.
Thank you for a very comprehensive review of the needs and some of the potential aspects. One additional component that I think should also be considered in the same way in which we considered water quality as something that's more of a chip process is juvenile blue crab habitat. And here I'm talking about crabs that are less than an inch and a half, 35 millimeters. Been working with the various advisory committees for nigh on two decades now. I was a member of the blue crab, original blue crab fishery management plan committee, also on the technical committee. Every one of those, we talk over and over again about the importance of habitat for the early juveniles. In Chesapeake Bay, work we've done there suggests as a limiting habitat. On page 5 of your review, you talk about it being a density-dependent area, suggesting that it could be limiting. And I think that there are a number of factors that are happening now that are impacting juvenile habitat. For example, we think of marshes and everything all being this wide of expanse available to habit for juvenile blue crabs. But they don't use eroding shorelines the same way as they use accreting shorelines. Different kinds of vegetation are utilized differently. Changing seagrass composition could have a very significant impact on juvenile blue crab habitat availability. And I think it's something that we need to consider because I understand it's outside the agency's jurisdiction, but much as you have done with water quality, developing sort of a synopsis or issue paper indicating the potential problems, probably indicating our vast lack of knowledge on it, and bringing in the other agencies, Division of Coastal Management with marsh and other restoration, water quality, to begin to assess some of these issues, I think is very important. Blue crabs are bottom dwelling, and I think that the juveniles for them are particularly impacted by local habitat characteristics. And if we don't consider that, we may eventually be missing an important piece of it. So just my comments.
Okay. Other questions? Go ahead, Mike. Okay, I got a quick question. I know, and I'm coming from this as being very ignorant about the crab fishing industry. I would assume a crab trawl is a lot more efficient than crab pots. Is that not the case? Why would you use a crab trawl instead of crab pots? Okay.
I'll try to attempt to answer that.
Okay, thank you. Okay.
Doug might have to clean me up a little bit, but
The crab trawl is used very early on in the season when the crabs come up out of the mud and the water's still real cool and them crabs ain't moving along very fast, so they'll take the crab trawl first when some of the first crabs come up and use it to gather those crabs because they're not going to be spunky enough to run around and try to find crab pots. Okay. So they take it's a very small fishery. It doesn't happen very long, just a little while, just a couple weeks maybe.
Not as much as it used to.
No, and it's dwindling, it's fading. But it does still happen, I feel like, just a few landings early on, but it's not a significant part of the fishery anymore. And the dredge, I'll give a little background on the dredge stuff, and it's one of the AC meetings we had, the last dredger that dredged the crab come to the AC meeting, and so that was kind of cool that, you know, he got to tell a few stories, but it hadn't happened since, 2016, and he only had one really good significant year of landings that one time.
Yeah, I think it was 2010 maybe.
Yeah, and it has been it hadn't happened in a long time. So I think you're seeing that trend really fade out, if that answers your question.
It does. It does. Okay. Any other questions or anything? Kay, were you wanting to make a motion about something?
Yes, sir. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to make a motion to approve Draft Amendment 3 to the Blue Crab Fishery Management Plan for public comment.
Okay. All right. There's a second. By Martin, we're going to send this out to send Amendment 3 out for advisory committee and public review and comment. Okay, after FMP, get rid of the 2. Twofer. Don't you dare. Okay, is that your motion as you made it? Okay, and a proper second. Any other discussion on this motion?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
So are we okay, Jason, addressing Dr. Posey's request without having it in a motion? Are we good?
I'm actually going to make a motion after we approve.
Okay, all right.
That's
okay, thank you.
All right. Any other discussion? If not, we'll just do a voice vote on this. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes without dissension. Martin, you got a motion you want
to
make?
Yeah, preview to the motion. I already gave it to them earlier. Gave it to y'all earlier. So, probably too long-winded. That's what you get by writing it ahead of time. I'd like to make a motion. Oops. Okay.
Put it in bold, too. There you go.
Okay, I'd like to make a motion based on some of the arguments or suggestions I made earlier, that the Division of Marine Fish, that in addition to the recommendations included with the current draft Blue Fishery Management Plan Amendment 3, the Division is encouraged. I know they're very busy. I understand, but just asking them to consider to develop an issue paper with pertinent recommendations and so research needs related to juvenile blue crab habitat availability, habitat quality, and habitat landscape, i.e. where they are. Analogous to the issue paper already developed on water quality impacts, which was Appendix 4.3 of the Fisheries Management Plan Amendment 3. So this is just encouraging that they do another issue paper.
Okay, is there a second on the motion? Second on Mike. Any discussion on this? All right, voice vote on this. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passes without dissension. Okay, are we done on blue crabs? I guess we are.
Later.
So, Jason, y'all good?
Yep. Thank
you. Great. Thank you very much for your work.